Hello and welcome to Two Beers with Steve. I am your host, Steve Patterson, and my guest today is Jan Ervin, host of the Gnostic Media Podcast and author of many books concerning, I'll just say, a wide range of topics. You know, he's been a guest on the Alex Jones Show. I heard you on the Unplugged Mom Show, and then I also heard you on Joe Rogan. What is it? The Joe Rogan Experience.
Sure.
And that was right. Like a 2-hour interview. I don't know how I ended up listening or watching that, or I actually listened to that podcast. It was a good program. And actually, it was that program where you made a small mention of logical fallacies, that brought me to your logical fallacies episode with Michael Labussier. And I eventually did a fantastic interview with Michael as well.
You did? That's great.
Terrific program. I mean, he was very, very good. And he's an instructor out of some university in Florida. And that's just, I mean, great interview, by the way. And I thank you for that. But the reason that I asked Jan to join me today was I wanted to discuss the Trivium. That was something that you discussed on the Unplugged Mom Show. And it's something that you also discuss on the Joe Rogan Experience, but it's something I haven't explored further, but I'm looking at it now, and I have arrived at that point at which I want to learn more about it. So that's why I asked you to come here today. But before I get started, welcome to Two Beers with Steve, Jan.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve, and let's have a couple of beers.
Let's do that.
And you know, and I used to brew beers, so this is perfect.
Ways back, we had a guy who was a brew master who said he wanted to come back on and talk strictly beers. I got to get that guy back on, because that's something I would like to do myself as well, is brew my own beers. But how complex of a process are we talking about?
It's a pretty serious art form. You know, it's more difficult than making wine. Wine is a serious art form, but the water pH is even one bit different, or anything is one bit different. The beer is completely different. The fact that companies like Budweiser, Coors, Sierra Nevada, et cetera, can continually manufacture the same beer, that's some serious business right there. And it takes serious effort. And I tip my hats to those people for being able to pull that stuff off. You know, someone who you also might want to consider, and I had him on my show way back at the beginning, I think it was episode number 16, was Steve Booner, who wrote a book called Sacred and Healing Beers, something to that effect. And he gets into indigenous beers from all over the world and how beers were anciently psychoactive, et cetera. So that was a very fascinating interview as well.
Is that barley and hops beers, or what are we talking
about? It even goes way before barley and hops, but you know, there were a lot of tree beers. Originally, Pilsner was made from henbane. Pilsner means cabbage. It's not from Pilsen or Pilsner, Czech Republic. Originally, it was the Pilsner or sauerkraut, which was actually at that time henbane. And so you had a beer that the Catholics brewed called gruit, which is also had many psychoactive substances in it. You have quiche, the types of beer in South America, and many different indigenous tribes for forever have brewed their own different beers. So from corn and other different things. So there's a lot of different types of beer out there that are never really even known about by most people. So
anything that can be fermented, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even elephants like to get drunk. They knock over palm trees and they step on the side of the trunk to create an indention, and then the sap collects in there and starts to ferment, and then they come back and suck up all the sap.
You are opening up rabbit holes like I wouldn't believe. There's so many directions I could take this interview after 3 minutes.
That's what I do. You know, speaking of Alice in Wonderland's rabbit holes, you know, I do write books on entheogens.
Yeah. Oh, and that's something we could probably talk about. We had an earlier discussion earlier today, and you know, it's you and like KMO. The fact that you guys discuss entheogens, and I respect what you do, and I respect you guys. That just piques my curiosity. I just, you know, and what people can look up entheogens. We won't get into that right now, but give me a little bit of background about yourself, and then we'll just kind of we'll get into talking about what is the Trivium, why is it important.
Well, background about myself, I'm an autodidact, which means that I'm self-educated. Originally, I went to school to got into electronics engineering, network engineering. Today, I would be what you might call a legacy network engineer.
That autodidact is like, it's like, what, is that self-taught? Is that?
Yeah, that's okay. Exactly. Yeah, self-taught. Well, essentially, back in the early 90s, I started researching industrial hemp. I became close friends with Jack Herer, who is the father of the hemp movement, and he and I worked together for about 18 years up until his death in 2010. And he turned me on to a lot of research on the entheogen aspect. I've written two books, Astrotheology and Shamanism, Christianity's Pagan Roots, that goes into some of the ties between Christianity and the ancient pagan traditions, as well as my second book is called The Holy Mushroom, Evidence of Mushrooms in Judeo-Christianity, wherein I published the first ancient primary text, Christian text, that specifically discusses the holy mushroom. And I've actually completed a book. It's about finished anyway. Publisher's looking at it right now, called Entheogens and Consciousness, A Comprehensive Overview of Psychedelic Studies, which is 50 interviews that I did with many of the world's leading experts on psychedelic drugs, from scientific, religious, anthropological, archaeological perspectives, as and just bringing together all of these different experts and allowing them to present their information in full, and then putting it all together for the first time. To summarize quickly, for somebody who's interested in studying psychedelic drugs, for instance, there's probably 400, 500, 600 books out there, and a lot of academic books and everything. And for somebody to get into that field, it takes a lot of reading, years of reading, to even really begin to get your feet wet. So by bringing all of these leading experts together and doing these interviews, we can kind of, what we did was create a 2-volume, 1,000-page set. So instead of reading 200 books, you could read two and really grasp a lot of different aspects of what the field is about. And then I'm also working on another project right now, The Secret History of Magic Mushrooms, which goes into how members of the Council on Foreign Relations and the CIA, et cetera, were behind launching the psychedelic movement. And I've been collecting primary documents through university archives like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, et cetera, for the last several years, piecing together this whole story. And I'm just about ready to go public with that. As you mentioned, I run the Gnostic Media Podcast. I run Trivium Education website. I'm the publisher for the Dead Sea Scrolls scholar, John Marco Allegro. I also run his website and produced the film The Pharmacratic Inquisition back in 2007. So, I've got a number of different projects out there, do lectures and things like that, teach people fallacies in the Trivium. So hopefully that's not too long-winded, but there you have it.
Yeah. I wonder how all that ties into the Trivium. Let's just start with the first question, which is, what is the Trivium? Because when you use that term for the first time, I had to look it up on Wikipedia. It was so new.
What you're going to even hear on Wikipedia is going to be a fairly heavy misinterpretation of really what it is. But the Trivium essentially comes, and we don't even really know how ancient it is, but it's essentially a system that was used primarily by elites and those in control. It was the system that they were educated in. Like if you were to go to an Ivy League school, you would probably be taught something to this form of education. Now, the Trivium is the first stage of the classical seven liberal arts. And everybody's heard of the seven liberal arts, but most colleges and universities today, they don't teach the real form of the seven liberal arts. They sort of teach a bastardized, watered-down version. And then the second stage of the seven liberal arts is something called the quadrivium. So the trivium and the quadrivium make up the seven liberal arts. Now, the trivium, and what the reason why the trivium has always been used by the elites is, and I'll read you this quote right here, and this is from Sir Thomas More's book Utopia from the 16th century. And he says, "For if you, the rulers, suffer your people to be ill-educated and their manners to be corrupted from their infancy, and then punish them for those crimes to which their first education disposed them, what else could be concluded from this but that you first make thieves and outlaws and then punish them?" So what essentially has been happening, and probably for at least 2,000 years, and we can trace some of this information back into ancient India, but the trivium is how the elites teach their own children how to think so that they can outthink the so-called profane or the dead, the general masses, and control them, manipulate them, use them as slaves, etc. So the trivium is really a double-edged sword. It teaches you critical thinking skills on how to free your mind, which is why it's called the seven liberal arts, or better said would be the seven liberating arts, because the word liberal has actually been spun to its antithesis. Today, when people hear the word liberal, they think of tax and spend communism or something like this, or somebody who wants to come and take your guns away. Well, the word liberal actually means, and if you look it up in any good dictionary, it means of or befitting the free, of or befitting a free man, someone who is free born. And so, you know, it's the word liberal has been literally spun to its antithesis. So,
If I could jump in here and just say, like, and ask you point blank, is the trivium a critical thinking skill?
The trivium is a critical thinking system that you can learn, and it takes about 2 years for it to really become fully integrated when you study it. And, you know, you do need to, you know, read some books and go through some material for it to really start to integrate into you. But it's a systematic method for thinking. It doesn't teach you what to think. It teaches you how to think. Okay. So what it does.
I like that because it's not conclusion based, which is
right.
Like
exactly.
The school system that I was in was like a conveyor belt. Here, learn these facts,
exactly.
You know, and regurgitate them on test day. Whereas you need a way of, you know, navigating this world, and you need skills rather than just
exactly
facts.
Right. Exactly right. So the public education system in this country, as opposed to like the Ivy League schools, all they're teaching is the servile and the mechanical arts, which means they're teaching you enough to make you a good servant, okay, to run a cash register, to, you know, work at some shop, to, you know, maybe if you're really good, you can become a manager or a CEO somewhere, but they're not really creating critical thinkers, inventors, creative thinkers, artists, things like this, people who can follow their passions and create their own lives. They're creating people that are best in factories and military positions, essentially. And so,
but are there other styles of like critical thinking, or other systems of critical thinking, and how do they differ from like the trivium? And the thing that comes to mind is like
The trivium is really based on Aristotelian logic, but the trivium is the first system that is put together, essentially, you know, how it is. You know, for the last probably eight centuries, they'll put logic, grammar, rhetoric, logic, etc. But the way that we teach it is essentially the first, but we're probably the first to ever teach it in this method. And what we're doing is, because the trivium has always been used for, and I'll just put it bluntly, for mind control. And when you begin to study the fallacies and everything and learn how this stuff works, and you turn on the news media or something, all of a sudden you see it work. And we can go into some of the logical fallacies in a bit, but it's essentially a mind control system that the elites would always use against us. So what we've been doing for the last 2.5 years is essentially leveling the playing field, giving everyone the same tools so that they can't be fooled and manipulated so easily, right? So when you begin to learn how to spot the logical fallacies that someone is attempting to use against you, you can see all of these, and the word fallacy comes from Latin fallare, which means to lie. So when somebody is lying to you, you can, instead of having a implicit feeling that you're being lied to, like, you know, I have a funny feeling that that car salesman isn't telling the truth, or that politician, etc. Mm-hmm. It actually enables you to name explicitly the exact type of lie they're using against you. So, like, for instance, if somebody is telling you, if somebody comes out with some message like that Obama is doing this or that, and Obama says, you know, this guy is a pinko communist, ignore everything he says. Well, that is known as an ad hominem attack. He's not addressing any of the information that this person would present. He's attacking that person instead. So this is known as an ad hominem, or attacking the man. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's red herring fallacies, and the red herring comes from the old fox hunt days, and they would train the hound dog to go after the fox. And when the fox was, or when the hound was trained, or they would, you know, they would test the hound to see if it was trained well enough. They would have it chasing a fox, and then they would drag a herring across the fox's trail to see if they could lead the hound off of the fox's trail and onto the fish, right? So this is called a red herring. And so the whole idea is, and politicians love this, when you ask a politician a question, and he'll completely bring up an entirely separate, unrelated topic to see if he can get you to forget your original question. There's straw man arguments, which if, let's say if I present an argument, somebody will present an argument that looks very similar to my argument, but a few key points are twisted. And then what they'll do is they'll debunk their twisted version of my argument, and then they'll pretend that they've debunked my argument. And so that's a very common one. Slippery slope fallacies, appeal to emotion, appeal to belief, appeal to tradition, appeal to fear. Ad baculum is one where, you know, you do what I say or I'll beat the crap out of you. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, government is based on that.
This logical fallacies are actually fun to read up, because you're like, or even watch, like, you know, read a book on logical fallacies and then watch one of the debates. And see if you can pick out the logical fallacy. And then another one is, and I picked this up from you, is watch the commercial and see which logical fallacy you can pull out of that commercial.
So, you know, and what people can do, and on the triviumeducation.com website, somebody who was listening to my shows and stuff, they put together a website called Fallacy a Day, and which is linked on the triviumeducation.com website. It might be fallacyaday.com. But you can learn one fallacy a day, you know, and it's fun because you learn these fallacies, and then you can watch TV commercials, you watch the politicians, watch the mainstream media, and, you know, in your average commercial, which is 30 seconds long, they'll usually attempt to run about 40 fallacies at you, so, you know, more than one a second. And I run another website called popupfallacies.com. And, like, you know, and I haven't put too many videos out, but for instance, last March when Obama did the Osama bin Laden death speech and all, mm-hmm. I did a pop-up fallacy based on the old VH1 pop-up videos content. And so what we found was that Obama had a lie per minute rating of like 9.5 lies per minute. It was close to like 85 or 90 lies that he made in a 9 minute and 45 second video clip that he did. So you know, it's fun to go through and learn how to see all of this stuff. So, you know, then when you learn all of the logical fallacies, you know, when somebody tries to tell you there's no conspiracies going on, it's just like, you know, let's sit down for a second. Let's learn some logic. Let's learn some logical fallacies. Let's learn not to kill the messenger when somebody tells you something and use all of these ad hominem attacks. Okay, now you know some logical fallacies. Now let's sit down and watch the news for an hour and you tell me if they're not completely lying to you and trying to fool you and manipulate you, you know?
Yeah.
And the fun thing about fallacies is it takes 20 or 30 minutes, and, you know, and people should study them every day for a couple of months to get really familiar with them. But, you know, you can study them for 30 minutes or an hour, or listen to somebody talk about them and have a pretty good general background of them and be fairly well protected. And you should consider understanding the logical fallacies as installing a mental antivirus system in your own brain. You would put an antivirus system on your computer. Mm-hmm. Why don't you put one on your brain? Right. And so you have all of this false information trying to fool you and control you coming in, just like it would mess up your computer. And just like your computer runs like crap when it gets a virus in it, guess what? So does your head. Mm-hmm. Right. So, by having a systematic method and knowing the fallacies, et cetera, you can filter this stuff out and keep yourself protected from predators. And guess what, folks? Humans have predators.
Yeah. Let me back up for a second, because let's go back to the the fundamentals of the trivium. Okay. The trivium comes out of three different methods or three different schools of thought.
Three roads crossing is really what it means.
Three roads crossing. Okay. All right. And let's go over those real quick. And because there's a certain order in which you must learn them.
And like I said earlier, you know, we're the ones that really point out this order. Whenever I see the trivia.
Who's the we?
My website, Gino Denning, Tragedy and Hope, Richard Andrew Grove, our group of people that we've been focusing for the last 2.5 years to put this out there. And the reason why we always say that it must be in this order is because it's a systematic method. And when you understand it, which I'm going to explain right now, it will make perfect sense to you. So the first step of the trivium is grammar. And the trivium is composed of grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Now, grammar can be considered knowledge, okay? And knowledge, we can also consider as asking who, what, where, and when. Now, the reason why we call the grammar aspect who, what, where, and when is because when you think of grammar, grammar is composed of nouns, adjectives, verbs, punctuation, all this kind of stuff, right? And so when we look out into reality, what do we see? We see trees, we see birds, we see cars, we see roads, houses, books.
Visual.
You know, green, blue, all of these words out there. See, to be able to identify and think of something, you have to be able to name it, right? You define what that is. And for us to be able to communicate clearly, we have to agree upon the same definition of a word in our conversation so that we're not confusing one word, which is which. And so, by understanding the grammar, going out there and asking who, what, where, when, we're going out there and collecting all of the essential data. Who was involved? Where did it happen? What was it about? When? Time reference. So these are the things that we have to know to make it gather any information about anything. And then, so the next step, in the process of the trivium is logic. And logic is also known as the art of non-contradictory identification. And so logic is also understanding. You can't understand something before you have knowledge of what you're trying to understand. So you've asked who, what, where, when. Now you're going to try and understand what you've, all of the information, all of these words of based on the facts of reality that you collected. You filter out the contradictions and then you're left with understanding. So let's say, for instance, that, you have the parts to a car engine all laying out on the floor. And so grammar, you're asking who, what, where, when. You're essentially, you're figuring out all of these parts and, you know, what they are, what they do, what they might function as, et cetera. And so in the logic aspect, you're removing all of the contradictions in all of these parts and you're learning how they go together and into a workable machine, a workable engine without contradictions that actually functions smoothly, the pistons running, everything, et cetera, right? And so then the logic aspect is really answering why, okay? So you have who, what, where, when, then logic answers why. And so the next step is rhetoric, and rhetoric explains how. So you might consider rhetoric the owner's manual or like a Chilton's manual, some sort of manual of a car engine that explains all of the parts, how they went together and how it all works. So the rhetoric aspect, you've taken all of the information in a systematic method, who, what, where, when, you've processed it all through, asking why, removing all of the contradictions, and now you're at the rhetoric aspect. You've gone through the first two steps, and then you can explain what exactly the steps you went through and how you did it all to someone else. So you have a systematic process that you go through before you reach any conclusion on any topic. Now, the nice thing about the trivium is because you have the logic aspect in there, and logic teaches you the logical fallacies, which we were just talking about. If somebody comes up to you with a new piece of information that might change the foundation of what you've already figured out in your original analysis. Let's say a new, somebody comes running up and has this bit of information. Well, one of the logical fallacies is to kill the messenger, right? You know, Plato's allegory of the cave here. So right. you know not to kill the messenger. You know to take this person's message in. And even if the person is 95% full of crap, you might be able to, you know, if there's 5% valid information in there, it still behooves you, it's still to your benefit to go through the 95% of crap, get out that little diamond nugget that you can use and carry on. You know, so you don't want to use what's called the fallacist fallacy to just because somebody is using fallacies when they approach you about something to completely dismiss them. So you recognize that even though this person is using fallacies communicating with you, they may be ignorant. So you always want to fact check them anyways. So like, let's say if, you're standing on one side of a hill, you live with a tribe on one side of a hill, and on the other side of a hill, there's a warring tribe. And the village idiot one day, he's up on the other side of the hill or up at the top, and he comes running down, and, you know, he's always annoying. He's the boy who cried wolf type of stuff, right? And, he comes screaming, running over on, from the top of the hill. He says, you know, appeal to fear, appeal to, all of these things. The other side is coming. A whole army is coming. They're going to kill us all. Run for your lives, blah, blah, blah. And everybody says, oh, here comes the village idiot, you know, screaming. He's all full of fear again. Look at all this appeal to fear stuff. You could think like that, or you could go back to the grammar stage and check the facts of reality. Ask who, what, where, when. Stick your head up over the hill and go, oh, shit, there is an army coming to kill us. Or not. So, you know, the idea is you always have a systematic method. And by checking those fallacies, mm-hmm. you don't kill the messenger. You have a process to filter out the lies and come down to the truth by asking who, what, where, when, removing the contradictions. And then you can go to the other people and say, hey, you know, even though he's got all of these appeal to fear problems, I just went over and I stuck my head over the hill. And the guy's right. So, let's go get our armaments on and get ready. And so this is the way that we can, you know, properly handle any information coming in via the five senses
and gather what we know at the time to be the truth. I mean, that's really the goal, exactly. Right? The goal is to get to the truth.
Exactly. And with anything that you're studying, in fact, the, you know, the logical aspect and knowing all of the logical fallacies, in fact, enables you to study just about any topic almost twice as fast because you're able to filter through all of the BS by cutting through all of those fallacies or lies and getting right to the core of it. Right. Uh-huh. So you're not wasting your time chasing all of these ad hominem attacks or, oh, this guy is a pinko commie. So I'm going to ignore all that. You say, oh, they tried to just dismiss this guy with an ad hominem attack. Oh, I better check out what he's got to say. Right. So then you're able to get down to the facts of reality a lot faster. And in fact, you know, by understanding and how the trivium works, you can actually go through and in a way reverse engineer history. By undoing all of the fallacies that were told throughout history and figuring out what really happened, right? So, you know, and another aspect I should mention that, you know, the trivium, this is why I should always say, I always say it's in this order. Interestingly, however, when you learn the trivium, you need some study of logic first because logic helps you understand grammar. So when you process and you're using the trivium in daily life, grammar goes first, but when you begin to study it, it helps to put logic first. Because the concepts in logic and understanding the logical fallacies and the way logic works helps you to understand the construction of grammar and everything and how it works in our daily lives.
Right, right. But you always talk about always keeping the trivium in order, grammar, logic, rhetoric, and not getting them mixed up.
Well, I'm defining two distinct times. When you're learning and studying the trivium, Get a small foundation in logic first so that you can understand grammar, because understanding grammar can be a tough subject on its own, or general grammar. So, but by having a foundation of logic, when, especially as adults, because, you know, children, I would say the opposite, learn your grammar first. But as adults, because we've been so conditioned and brainwashed and have so many fallacies and haven't been taught how to think properly, by taking, you know, reading a book on logic or, you know, listening to a logic course or something like that, it will give you a foundation to much more easily go in and study the trivium or the grammar aspect. When you're actually applying the trivium in your thinking process, yes, always ask who, what, where, when, why, and how. So grammar, logic, rhetoric, input, processing, output, just like a computer. But, like I said, because of our dumbed down education, we have to learn how to think essentially to even begin to be able to understand the grammar stuff at this point in our lives. So in the study of the trivium, start out with a little bit of grammar or logic, then go back to grammar and then go through it all. But in your daily practice, you'll always put grammar, logic, and rhetoric.
Okay. And when has the trivium the education ever been practiced? I mean, is this, I've read that it's a medieval critical thinking skill, and that was taught in those times.
Sure.
And then, I mean, was there a point in time? I mean, did we make it all the way up to like 1910 and the government education system kicked in and they just totally did away with it?
I mean, probably from the 1850s or so was really when it started to be pushed out. There, you know, the education in the United States for a while in the 17, 1800s was largely centered on the trivium. And from, you know, if you go back, anciently speaking, yes, it was taught in medieval times. There's a really good book, Metalogicon, written in the 12th century that is in defense of the liberal arts. But in its current form, probably Aristotle is the one who put most of it together. But then it looks like, again, that he may have got it out of travelers coming out of ancient India. And we can see, you know, just like in the Brahma class in India, this elite class, they had techniques of political mind control way back then. So it's these types of techniques that have kind of come down through history. Now, Aristotle actually got in trouble by Alexander the Great for publishing this stuff. Aristotle was Alexander's mentor. And so he publishes how the mind control systems work. And Alexander's like, what the hell are you doing? And so there's an in and out sort of different groups. You know, unfortunately, many of the secret societies like to keep it within their groups. And, you know, to occult something is to be able to use it against others. And this is why education is to unoccult. And so this is why it's so important to teach the trivium to people, because the only way it can be used against you is if you don't learn it. If you don't learn the logical fallacies and learn how lawyers and politicians and all of these sophist bastards do this stuff, if you don't learn it, that's how it can be used against you and how you can be manipulated. So that's why it's so important to learn it, so that you're armed against somebody potentially using it against you.
Okay, so when you're talking about mind control, you're saying the elites are using this as mind control. Is that they have a complete understanding of the trivium?
Anybody who knows all of the logical fallacies in the trivium can control you if you don't have it. I can walk up to you and I could start using appeal to emotion, appeal to fear, all these different fallacies, writing false statements. And if you don't know, if you don't have a systematic process to go through and figure out if I'm telling the truth or not, who, what, where, when, why, how, I can mislead you however I want. Right. Yeah. If you might be able to have a funny feeling that I'm lying to you, but if you don't have an explicit way to figure it out, I could control you. And so that's why it's so important to be able to have a systematic method to install an antivirus system in your head, because just because you don't learn it doesn't mean somebody's not already using it against you. And as soon as you begin to learn it, all you have to do is turn on the 5 o'clock news and you go, oh my goodness, they are really using this stuff against me.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny that you mentioned all the stuff about mind control and the fact that the elites, or even like advertisers and corporations, have a knowledge of the trivium. And I don't know if you're familiar with Marshall McLuhan's work.
I have one of his books here on media. He's got a book on the trivium too, I think. Haven't.
That's right. I looked up the trivium, and the first thing that comes up is a rock band that's like a death metal band.
Absolutely. Well, you know, obviously, and if you get in, if you read some of their lyrics, they're clearly trying to get this message across to their audience. So there's a whole underlying theme that band appears to be doing there.
Oh, I went looking for videos for you, and I had to go through 4 pages of this trivium rock band. I'm a big fan now. By the way,
I haven't really listened to them, so that's pretty
funny. Death metal.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is I was at Guitar Center getting some audio equipment recently, and this guy walks in wearing a Trivium band t-shirt, and I just about burst into laughter sitting there. Right?
Yeah, I mean, they're amazing. And they play they play huge audiences. But by the way, you know, like, you have to go through like 4 pages of Trivium videos before you can get one to one of yourself. But Marshall McLuhan had wrote a book about the Trivium, and that popped up on my Google search. And Marshall McLuhan is known for his experience in like modern advertising or around the like the 1960s, kind of like the Mad Men era.
Right.
And he was a scholar of the trivium, and here he is in the advertising industry, okay? And you're talking about manipulation, the fact that they're having an understanding, these elites understanding, and then Marshall McLuhan understanding this and then helping corporations to manipulate people that don't have the ability to look at something critically.
Absolutely. That's the whole idea. Yeah. Sophistry is entirely built on that. This is where we get the word sophisticated from, the sophisticated class, because they use sophistry to fool the dumb masses, the dead. You know, see, here's the thing is those that don't learn the seven liberal arts, they were the slaves, right?
Right.
So you learn the servile and the mechanical arts. And that's why the seven liberal arts are called that, because you were free when you learned these things, and you couldn't be so easily manipulated and controlled.
But don't you think so? All like of there's some, you know, this is, you know, a lot of this stuff can be sort of like realized on your own. I mean, it's a very difficult problem.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, but here's the thing is I had been studying politics and conspiracies and writing books on all of this stuff for almost two decades before I came across the trivium. And let me tell you, man, it really changed everything. I mean, I understood it before, but then I was able to go back through everything that I had learned before and see who were providing misinformation and all of this stuff and trying to manipulate me or fool me and take me down the wrong path. And suddenly it's like, oh goodness, look at all of this that I can see now that I haven't, now that I can identify all of these fallacies and misuse of logic and everything explicitly, it changes the entire game of everything. And, you know, like I said, you know, one way you'll get that intuitive, funny feeling, the implicit thing versus the other one, which is explicit. And that's the difference is when once you have that systematic method, and it is the way that our brains work naturally. And the public education system, like when you get into John Taylor Gatto's work, I've interviewed him three times on my show, and a partner of mine, Richard Andrew Grove, did the Ultimate History Lesson series with John Taylor Gatto, which you can get the DVD series for off my website at GnosticMedia.com. It's
right.
All
that's,
right
that's what I like to stop and talk about, because John Taylor Gatto, I don't know his work, but I've heard it repeated over and over again from other people that just...
Oh, you absolutely have
I
to
have
study.
To. Yeah.
When you,
I just haven't gotten there yet.
Go on my website and watch the Ultimate History Lesson. Watch all 5 hours of it and be prepared to be blown away. And all of the citations are right there on the screen. And you can order, you know, for $55, there's a thing there to get a whole package of stuff at like almost $100 discounted. So, you know, check that out, and you support our work and support Tragedy and Hope's work for doing it. You know, it's and also John Taylor Gatto had a stroke recently, so we're also, you know, for each person who supports the project, we're also sending money to him and his family to help with his recovery.
Give me the basis of his work. What are we talking about here? Because I think I need to know more about him. I just haven't gotten that far down the rabbit
John
hole.
Taylor Gatto was New York State School Teacher of the Year 2 or 3 years in a row when he quit on the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal, prompting the White House to freak out and call him. And he was one of the top dogs. He would go into inner cities, these poor kids, black and Latino kids that supposedly, are genetically inferior to all the rich white kids. And he would, in a matter of 6 months or a year, get them to beat out all of the rich white kid schools in these, you know, in these state education competitions. And, upsetting the whole game, and figured out that the whole game was about dumbing the kids down. And basically he goes through and shows the entire history of how it came, you know, the whole dumbing down came out of the Prussian education system. You know, a lot of people listening to this might be, oh, this guy's, you know, wacky conspiracy theorist.
Right.
Oh my God, Steve, how could you have him on? Let me just point out. Don't interrupt me, please. Let me just say this. For those people, that is what is known, as we already addressed, an ad hominem attack. So rather than attacking me and what I'm saying, take the time to use your brain and look the guy up and study the information. Take it in. Don't put what we call in the trivium world, don't put your logic before your grammar. Ask who, what, where, when before you come to a conclusion. Intelligent people gather data before they come to a conclusion. So for those people out there who want to throw false attacks and lie without thinking critically about the information, take that in and consider it for a moment. Okay, there you go.
Okay, I'll definitely check out his work. Just because, you know, I've, like I said, a number of people brought him up. His name's come up repeatedly, and then you go ahead and you mention his name, and I'm like, okay, I gotta start knowing more.
Oh yeah,
there's
a big banner on the front of my website for the Ultimate History Lesson. Like I said, I've interviewed him 3 times, and we pretty much my partner Richard Andrew Gove put together the package of Gatto's seminal work, which is the Ultimate History Lesson. So, you know, this is 5 hours that's going to blow your mind of how the entire education system is built up. All of the citations are there for, you know, mm-hmm. for those who care to actually fact check things. They can go through and check every single detail for themselves. So this is not some tin hat conspiracy theory. You can actually verify it if you have the brains to do so.
Yeah.
You know?
Before we start talking about John Taylor Gatto, we were talking
about.
Too
late.
Too late for what?
Before we were, sorry.
Oh, yeah, just before we were talking about John Taylor Gatto.
I think I just finished the first IPA there, the first half of it. Starting to feel good here.
Yeah, well, anyway, right before you were talking about John Taylor Gatto, we were talking about the language, you know, and I think that was important because in every business I've ever worked in, I walked in, I didn't understand what anybody was talking about, you know. They, you know, something would happen, okay, and they had a language for it. You know, like, we're talking about logical fallacies. You know, when you see a commercial, you're like, well, they're doing this and I know something's not right. And then, but when you say, well, that's an ad hominem or that's a red herring or, you know, and you have a language for it. It's like a shortcut. Immediately your brain understands what's going on and you're creating a toolbox. You've got these new tools, you know, to sort of cut through the BS and get right to what's important. I mean, how do you guys teach your courses? I mean, is this something like a classroom type thing? Or are you doing it over
the internet?
Well,
we do teach, we do have a weekly logic group through Tragedy and Hope where there's a group of us that meet and, go over, study everything. Other than that, you know, it's not, you know, we hope to one day have a course put together. That's kind of the nice thing about having this group that we, you know, go through and hash out everything and look at what people have done in the past and the problems with it and how it can be made better and, you know, what works with that and then, repackage it. But that's really what's all up on the triviumeducation.com website. And,
So I can't enroll myself in an online Trivium education course.
Well, you know, that's the whole idea, really, of the Trivium is to become an autodidact, right? So, you know, the whole idea is not to appeal to some authority to always have to go to teach you things. The idea is to learn how to learn yourself, okay, to become an autodidact, to become a self-teacher. And so that's really what the whole process of who, what, where, when, why, and how, that's what it naturally does. So as you begin to integrate this whole process, you become an autodidact and you no longer need really the teacher. I mean, sometimes at certain things, you might want to go seek out a mentor to help you through certain phases of things, but otherwise you should be able to become, you know, a PhD level expert in just about any topic. And, you know, what's interesting is, after about 2 years, you know, maybe a year to 2 years of this, you can go out and really be on the same level of most PhDs with ease. You know, you can figure out all of the fallacies. You can cut through, get to the main sources, study those main sources, and within a few weeks or a few months, be able to hold your own against, you know, some of the leading academics out there and understand how things were put together originally and why. So having those tools of learning how to learn and learning how to think, not what to think, right? See, teachers are there to tell you what to think, not how to think. And so that's the problem with that, and that's why you don't really, you know, while you might want to study or form a peer group, a study group to learn the trivium, you don't really want to go to some authority about it. That's contradictory to the nature of what it is.
And I agree about the school system, and we can spend a lot of time just destroying the education that I received through the school system. I feel like it's a conveyor belt. I was very good at memorizing things and then regurgitating them for test time.
Sure.
So I was always a good student because of that fact.
It's called mimetic learning. That's really the idea of what that type of education is.
Yeah, but as far as having like skills of, you know, of having no fear of approaching any subject, it doesn't really prepare you for that. Okay.
No, and that's exactly what the trivium does, is it gives you a systematic method to approach any topic and know, you know, how to start at it, how to get through it. And once you've gotten through it, you have a systematic method of looking back to understand exactly how you reached the conclusions about that topic that you did.
So how do you feel about, like, I know you're probably not a big fan of public school system. Is that a fair conclusion?
Well, public schools, one, are based on the fallacy of ad verecundiam through the government, which is the appeal to authority. And government, I'm a non-statist, which means I don't believe in state. Government does not exist without violence, without the violation of natural law. Government exists as a fallacy of ad verecundiam, as a false appeal to a belief, and it's really there to impede everything that we consider as free. Now, some people may think that me saying that is completely outrageous. I challenge those people with such ideas against for statism to go to my website, GnosticMedia.com, and listen to my entire series with Larkin Rose on the fallacy of government, the fallacy of ad verecundiam. And Larkin Rose also has a book called The Most Dangerous Superstition. Now, government is the largest religion out there. And so public schools, you know, first they go around the neighborhoods and they threaten you that if you don't pay your homeowner's tax, that they're going to steal your house, that the police are going to come with their guns, and they're going to say, look, you give us your frickin' money, or we're going to put you in jail, we're going to handcuff you, we're going to shoot, we're going to beat you if you don't hand over your house or the cash.
The confiscation tax.
Right. It's the mob. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And so the mob goes around, called the government, and they collect this money. And then, you know, what they do is they put you in a school system that's there to dumb you down. No Child Left Behind is a complete joke. Finland has the number one education system in the world, hands down. And we have nothing like Finland. And so, you know, the entire system, first they beat you up, they steal your money, and then they give your kids an education that encourages them to perpetuate this whole myth of the mobsterism, right? How you should always believe in the mobster and pay your taxes to the mobster and, you know, support everything that the mobster does, and that you are not intelligent enough to make proper decisions on your own and, to think out things clearly. You don't know how to learn things on your own. You need our authorities, our teachers to teach you what to think. And not how to think, by the way. And so this is the premise of the public education system. And like I said, those who think I'm completely crazy, instead of putting your logic before your grammar, go to my website, check out the Trivium Study section, check out my John Taylor Gatto interviews. All of the Ultimate History Lesson with Gatto is up on the website for free. All of the Trivium Education stuff is there for free. Study the logical fallacies so that you can see for yourself how this stuff operates. And you'll come to discover that I'm not making this stuff up and this isn't some wild tin hat conspiracy.
Right. But I was going to get to the question about homeschooling. I mean, is that, I mean, cause I want to find, like, I've got young children myself and I want to give them the education that I think is the best. Okay. So.
Absolutely.
Cause I care for them so much. I spend a lot of time.
Sure.
I read a lot of books. And I'm also experimenting a lot with my own children and seeing, you know, I want them to be independent individuals at a very young age and to give them critical thinking skills at a very young age so they're not manipulated. Okay.
Absolutely.
So But the problem is that it's, I see the only option as a parent is to go the homeschooling option, but me and my wife, we both work. Okay. And so there's this conflict of there of handing them over to the government.
You can look, for instance, look into, group homeschoolings, you know, move near family members. You know, we're unfortunately one of the only countries in the world where, we move away from our family when we turn 18. You go to Europe, you know, the grandkids build a house in the front of the grandparents' house, and every generation tears down the old generation's home and builds a new house on the same property, and they rotate it over and over. So you have this whole family unit there, which is, of course, what they intentionally want to break apart and get everybody into the cities and away from that family supportive lifestyle. But, you know, group homeschooling, you know, begin to follow your passions and stop giving your time away to others who don't have your best interests in mind, but their own. I think, you know, by studying the Trivium, you'll begin to make, you know, your self-esteem will rise, number one. And number two, as your self-esteem rises, because you're able to make clear and precise decisions that are going to be in the long-term best interest for yourself, you're going to build that self-confidence, be able to follow your passions a lot more, be able to figure out things that are going to bring an income to yourself without relying on some job, right? Instead of somebody stealing your time away from you and them making money off of your time, you're going to start making money for your own time and then teach your children the same tools so that they're not caught up into that. And it's a very hard step. I mean, it took me years to break away from the machine. And I've been out of the machine for maybe four and a half years now, and it was a tough step. But you're going to have to do it.
Yeah, as a parent, that's hard. I mean, we live in a small town, and so I'm able to send my child to a very small private school. So.
Sure. Well, you can either teach the have the school provide the Trivium, or I mean, you know, if they're not teaching it, they're not teaching it. And if you're, even the nice thing about the internet, it is even living in a small community, you can make a living. And I'm sure maybe you get donations for your show and things like this. And, as you start expanding and growing your work, maybe writing or whatever you do, whatever other skills that you have, make money off of that and not worry about leaving to, make that money for somebody else every day.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a part of the Trivium that we haven't covered? I believe we've covered it from like top to bottom, but I don't know that much about it. And
we've given a general overview.
Yeah.
And, we haven't gone into great detail on it, but, for those who want more detail, again, they can go to the triviumeducation.com or they can go to my gnosticmedia.com website, gnosticmedia.com. And, there's a Trivium study section there on the left side of the website in the menu there, and start from the bottom of that section and work your way up through everything, and people will get it. I would say that I should explain a little bit about what the Quadrivium is here very quickly.
That's what I was just about to talk about, because the Trivium is just the first three parts of the seven liberal arts.
Sure, and the Quadrivium is really the quantifying aspects of the Trivium. It's how we go out and measure things out in reality and fact-check, stuff. When we're asking who, what, where, when, we have these measuring tools that we can use to quantify the world around us. So the first one is arithmetic, and arithmetic is number in itself, which is pure abstraction outside of space and time. And then we have geometry, which is number in space. And then we have music or harmonic theory, which is number in time. And then we have astronomy, which is number in space and time. And then these, the Trivium and Quadrivium is really the foundation of all of Western thoughts. And before you get into studying Western philosophy, Plato, Aristotle, all of that stuff, you really need to have a basic foundation in at least the Trivium, but the Quadrivium certainly wouldn't hurt you as well.
Okay, well, I think we've done a very good job of giving a general overview. I'm I'm certainly going to be spending more time checking out your website for the Trivium education. It's something that, you know, like I told you before we even got on the air, and I think I told you earlier today, is that this is a big, long journey. You know, when you become when you break away from the treadmill of society and you start charting your own course, eventually I think you're going to come upon the Trivium, you know, and that's where
hopefully,
I think I'm at right now. Yeah, I mean,
that's the whole idea of what we've been doing, but I would say that 2.5 years ago, you probably would have been pretty hard pressed to find it.
Right, exactly.
At least, you know, at least not in a watered down Christian form, let's say. And the Christians, what they'll do is they'll teach the Trivium, but they teach it in a way where they tell you not to study certain things so that you don't question, you know, your minister's dogma, so that you you know, continue to show up every week and put money in the basket.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you spending this 1 hour with us, Jan. I think that we will have to maybe revisit this topic, and also there's so many things that you mentioned during the show that I wouldn't mind unpacking in like a 4-hour episode.
Well, maybe broken into maybe three 1.5-hour episodes or something.
Yeah, what I'm getting at is that there was so much meat left on the bone.
Oh, sure, you know, granted there is, and we can hash out some more of this stuff for sure.
All right, well, thanks for being a guest on Two Beers with Steve.
You're welcome.